You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
So here we are, it is, as I said, Island Life on Waiheke Radio, and we have our first guest with us. Welcome, Fiona.
Good morning.
So, come on, Miss Fiona, what have we got to talk about this morning?
Oh, well, as usual, at Community Education, we have some fabulous courses on offer, so I just wanted to let the listeners know about some of the new courses that are on this term.
Great.
That they might want to enroll for.
Excellent. Fire away. Oh, have you got a little leaflet for me, please?
I have got a leaflet for you.
There you
go.
Thank you.
We may as well both know what we're talking about.
Oh, well, why change a habit of a lifetime? I am used to winging it.
So the first thing is that this term we're promoting all three of New Zealand's official languages at Community
excellent.
Ed. So giving people the chance to upskill. So that is, of course, English, Te Reo Māori, and New Zealand Sign Language.
Wow, that's excellent.
New Zealand Sign Language is a new course. We're just starting this term. It hasn't been run on the island for over 2 years, so it's a good opportunity to come along and learn this amazing visual language.
Oh, listen, I did sign language many years ago, and I've got to tell you, I am normally really rubbish at languages. Don't laugh, but I am. I'm really rubbish. However, sign language and me became quite good friends. I loved it. It's the most enjoyable thing I've done. enjoyable thing I've done from a language perspective. It was just fantastic. It's actually not as hard as it looks once you get into it, particularly if you've got a good teacher.
Well, it's quite amazing because it is a unique language to New Zealand, and it sort of takes on some of the concepts from English, some of the concepts from Māori, but it also has very much its own culture and way of communicating as well. You know, I think there's over 25,000 people in New Zealand who use it as their main way of communicating.
Really? Over 25,000 just in New Zealand?
That's right. In New Zealand, there's over 200,000 people in New Zealand who are either deaf or hearing impaired. So it's quite important for us, really, to be able to communicate even a little bit.
Yeah, I personally think, along with Te Reo, I think that it should be taught in schools. When I was teaching in the UK, there was a interest at one time about whether it should be taught, particularly for sort of lower school, maybe what we call intermediate here, to get a flavour of it. And I know some schools in the south of England, they introduced it for a little while to see how it went, and kids loved it as well. So I think it's something that's really important personally. But as well as the sign language, so I believe there's just a couple of places left on the sign language course.
There are, that's right. So we'd love people to come along and enrol for that. Mm. It starts on Saturday the 31st of July. It's going to be Saturday mornings at 10:30 for a couple of hours.
Right.
And it runs for 8 weeks. It only costs $60 for the whole term, so it's pretty good value.
Well, I happen to know that virtually the same course in Parnell is $150 or $160. So, wow, that's a real bargain. Excellent. So let's talk about English for communication.
So English is an ongoing course which has been running all year.
Yeah.
The tutor is Marilyn Todd, who's a really experienced English language teacher. And I know that the class has had heaps of fun. They come along on a Friday morning at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And we're really welcoming new people to come along to to join that class. The more the merrier for that one.
So is that aimed at, what sort of person is that aimed at?
So it's aimed for people who don't have English as their first language.
Right.
And it might be people who are just wanting to improve their communication skills, wanting to learn some of our strange Kiwi sayings that we all use.
Oh, flipping heck. English is my first language, and we've joked before about some of the strange words that people use over here in Kiwi land. And yeah, it took me a while. Pen and pin. What was that we were talking about the other
egg?
Pin and peen. Have you had a peen? No, I don't carry pins in my bag. Anyway, we won't go off on a tangent, but yes. So so is that just purely spoken English, or is it written
it's
as well?
It's spoken and written language.
Right.
The tutor, Marilyn, will do a little bit of an analysis at the beginning and see what people are sort of wanting in terms
really?
Of their learning goals.
Great.
And it's really all about improving people's confidence.
Right. Excellent. Oh, that sounds like a fantastic course.
Mm.
And people that are sort of even, that have been in New Zealand for some time but are perhaps a little bit rusty, it isn't just for newcomers, is it?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
It's,
okay.
Yeah.
Great. And what about
different levels?
The other course, the Te Reo?
And Te Reo, again, is another very popular course at Community Education.
Mm.
It's run down at Piritahi Marae with Cheryl and Alex, who are fabulous teachers.
Mm.
And this term, they're going to be focusing on increasing people's confidence to speak about themselves and their families. So things like speaking to a group of people about that. Should be lots of fun. And, of course, they bring in lots of kapa haka and other things as well.
Oh, do they?
Mm.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. I think that that's really important as well, that everybody should learn a little bit, she says, sort of hastily, skipping over the fact that I really did try, but I was rubbish. I think I might be a little bit better now, but that's fantastic. So some really great courses there.
And with all languages, it's practice that
it
makes
is.
The big difference. So if people have learnt a little bit of the language before, you're welcome to come back. If you're new, then you're welcome to join for the first time.
Brilliant. So let's just run over when the courses run. There's the sign language course, which starts next Saturday.
Yes, that's the 31st of July. It's at 10:30. English for Communication is on Fridays at 10 a.m. and that starts on the 6th of August. And Te Reo Māori is on Wednesdays. Now, you can either do that in the morning at 10 o'clock or in the evening at 6:30, exactly the same course.
Oh, really? Oh, so that's quite versatile then. That's great. Okay, well, thank you very much, Fiona. Anything else that you wanted to?
Well, I just wanted to let people know about a couple of other courses.
I thought she did.
sneaks them in.
A
couple.
She does.
One is the Boatmaster's Certificate. That's
the
Coast Guard Boating Education course. Now, that one we only tend to run once a year, so that's on this term. It won't be on again until next year. So if people have thought about doing that, this is the time to jump on board with that one.
Okay.
It's starting on Wednesday night, the 28th.
Right.
And it's a 12-week course, so it is quite a long course, but you come out at the end with a qualification, which is fabulous.
Yes, excellent.
And
presumably you're a bit safer on...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that one's for boaties with a bit of knowledge already who just want to take it to that next level, really.
Not for beginners?
Not for beginners. The beginners course is Day Skipper, which will be run in Term 4, so starting in October.
Right, okay.
And the last one is just a bit of fun, really. It's a new cooking course with Chef Tony Moss, who you may have heard of.
I have.
Yeah, fabulous young chef from Waiheke. He's working at Stony Ridge at the moment, but he's also been involved in starting the tapas menu up at Skinny Sardine. He worked at Tefo for a while, and he's been helping the kids at high school out with their competitions lately.
Oh, now that looks really interesting. So he's going to do a mixture of all types of food dishes, is he?
That's right. So he's really big on... using fresh seasonal produce and using the ingredients that you have in your cupboards to create something fabulous.
Brilliant. Now, that's just a short one, isn't it?
That's just a four-week course. And what happens with those courses is that people come along, cook the food, and then at the end of the session they sit down and enjoy it together.
Oh,
it's lots of fun.
Nice.
Lots
Excellent.
Of fun.
Excellent. Oh, that sounds really great. Is that it?
Well, there's more, but you can have a look on our website or our brochure if you want to know about the rest. And our website is waihikicomed.co.nz, or you can give us a call on 372 6417.
So that's 372-6417. Or, of course, just have a quick look on the website, which is a rather good new website that you you managed to do yourself, I believe.
Yeah, because of one of our courses. And you can just Google Waiheke courses or Waiheke community ed, and you'll find that.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, that's usually how I get there when I need to check something. Well, listen, thank you very much for coming in. As always, a pleasure to talk to you on the radio, Fiona, and hear about some exciting new courses that are coming up. And I'll see which one I'm going to put my name down for, I think. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Emma, and we look forward to hearing from all these new learners.
Excellent. Now, I'd like to welcome our next guest onto the studio, and that is Paula Dashwood. Hello, Paula.
Hi, good morning, Emma.
Oh, do you want to come just a touch closer? That's great. So you are from the Parents and Friends Association on Te Huri?
That's correct.
Great. And you come in to talk to us today about bubbles, bags and bling, which sounds fascinating. A fundraiser, isn't it?
It is. Te Huri School are redeveloping the library, and it's quite a major overhaul. It's not only the resources, but the whole redevelopment of the area. So the Parent and Friends Association are trying to raise some funds for new computers and of course, some books to go into the new library.
Some books to go into the new library as well.
Yes.
So basically, they're just all the resources. I mean, that sounds great. I mean, how much are you looking for to... Are you doing several fundraisers, rather, or is this a big one?
Well, this isn't really as big as we've done in the past, but over the last few years, the group have raised over $30,000 for the library specifically. And, I mean, it's never-ending. There's ongoing things that need to be money needs to be raised for. So
absolutely. So let's get into it. Let's talk a little bit about this evening. So it's entitled Bubbles, Bags and Bling Ladies Swap Night. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that means. Could you, and maybe some others aren't, let's talk a little bit about what that means.
Sure. I think all women can relate to the scenario where you've tried something or you've bought something or been given something that you thought looked absolutely fab at the time, got it home, and then it's lurked in the back of your cupboard ever since. So the idea is to go and grab those half a dozen stylish, almost new items and bring them along and give them a chance to delight someone else. So we all bring along those items, we present them really nicely at the Goldie Room at Goldwater Estate, and people get an opportunity. There's a ticket fee to pay to come in, and that's really the fundraising aspect
of
it.
Yes.
Then your items are exchanged at the door for tokens, and then you're allowed to go in, have a look around, see what you fancy, and then when we give the go ahead,
grab it.
And exchange. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, there could be some elbows getting in there. I think that could be quite fun. Okay, so it's at the Goldie Room.
Yes.
On the Goldwater Estate.
That's right.
And when is it?
It's next Tuesday evening, starts at 7:30.
Great. So that's this Tuesday coming, the 27th?
That's correct.
Excellent. So how's the evening going to work? You explained a bit about the swaps, but that's not all that's going to be happening, is it?
No. Well, when people arrive, they get a free glass of mulled wine. And
nice.
They spend the first half an hour or so just eyeing out some items and keeping an eye on what they might want to make a run for later on.
Hiding it from other people.
That's exactly right. Squirreling it away.
Yeah.
And then there's free nibbles as well. And we will have an MC who will run the evening, and DJ Vanessa will rock the house and get everybody into that
dancing
exactly,
and having a good giggle. Yes.
Well, that's the aspect of it as well, is that it's to be a fun night out. So we will have a raffle draw at some stage of the evening.
Yeah, now I've seen what prizes you've got for this raffle, and they're actually really, really good and aimed sort of at women and at families. So fantastic.
Yes, one of the mums, Nikki Cairns, and a few of the other mums as well, have been remarkable in what they've been able to secure from some very generous supporters. So, and the prizes are really good value.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the prizes, Paula.
Well, Workout Waiheke, Steph McKee has given us three sessions at Island PT, and that's valued at $240.
Oh, wow, I could do with that.
And then Michelle Bostock has some gorgeous paintings from Waiheke Treasures, and they're valued at $195. So a $2 raffle ticket can get you any one of these wonderful prizes. And then Waiheke Kickbox is offering us a 10-class session, which is valued at $130.
Oh, wow.
And then Hannah Bylow is going to give a voucher for makeup and hair.
Oh, excellent. I used to have my hair done by Hannah. She is excellent. I've seen when she's done wedding makeup and party makeup. She's very good, isn't she?
Oh, she is. She is.
And lovely.
Really wonderful that all these local businesses have so generously supported. So her makeover is worth $110. And then Wild and Waiheke have given us an archery and laser clay bird activity and a tasting of their lovely wines and beer, which is valued at $100. And then there'll be a pack of local wines valued at $50. So all of those prizes, those six prizes, really are part of the raffle.
Yeah, that's excellent. Some really good prizes. Your team must have done really well to get those, because it's not easy always getting, having organized a few raffles in my time, it's not always easy getting good quality prizes. But I've got to say, there isn't a boo-boo prize amongst them there.
They're all really good. Great. Absolutely
excellent.
Right.
Excellent. Hold on. What's the Karen Walker voucher?
Well, what we will do towards the end of the evening, we're going to have an auction where the garments that come in the door that are absolute top-notch, there's usually a handful of those that come in, will go towards what we call our premier stand. We didn't do this last year, but we thought it might be a nice development of the event. So what will happen is that our DJ will auction those off, and what you could win as part of that auction is one of those premier items. But we're also going to auction a $100 Huffer voucher, and Karen Walker has also given us a $100 voucher, and the Karen Walker voucher will be redeemed by your ticket number, so do hang on to your tickets on
the night. Okay, I'm going to show my lack of obviously sort of Kiwiness here. What's a Karen Walker voucher?
Well, it will allow you to redeem $100 worth of Karen Walker items.
I don't know who Karen Walker is. That's what I'm trying to
say. She's one of our most famous fashion designers.
Is she really?
She is.
Oh, well, you can tell that I'm not au fait with the fashion world. Probably just by looking at me, you can tell that, no, I'm more down with the, down with whatever I can pull out of the wardrobe. No, definitely not a designer kid, and I've just shown myself to be that very much. So she's a designer, Karen Walker.
She is. So, and she does lovely jewellery as well. So, I mean, there will be some treasure.
What's
Huffer? Huffer is another New Zealand brand of really cool clothing.
Ah, okay, okay. See, I'm learning. As well as having fun on the radio, I'm learning every day. Great. Okay, so some fantastic stuff there.
Yeah, and one last thing. We've also got the Freestyler styling irons, which will also be valued at almost $200. So there's loads of prizes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent. And you also get a little goodie bag as well with some samples to take home.
You do.
Yeah. Oh, this sounds like a great night out. So even though it is during the week, it is well worth managing to get somebody to look after the kids, or sneak out and have, not sneak out and leave the kids, I'm not advocating that, but you know what I'm trying to say, to get out on this Tuesday evening coming up and have a fun ladies only. It is ladies only, or are men allowed?
Well, we haven't actually discuss that issue. I mean, we assume that it would be just ladies, but look, we're open-minded about that.
We're open. We are very broad-minded on this island. If you want to come along and get yourself a few quality ladies' items, whether you be a lady or a gentleman of a certain type, then feel free.
Absolutely.
Because we're not prejudiced here on this island. We welcome and embrace everybody and all sorts. So if you're male and you wish to come along and see what it is that happens on ladies' evenings, then as well, come along. But it is going to be a fun night. That's what I think the key is that I'm looking at here, and from what you're saying, is it's going to be fun.
Absolutely, and it's a great cause. Yeah. It's a really important cause.
Of course. Anything to do with our kids on the island is important, and we should all try and support it.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming in. Very nice to meet you.
Thank you, Emma.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke People, Events and Issues, brought to you by Island, Art, Craft, Giftware, Clothing and Bric-a-Brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
I'd just like to welcome Andy Spence into the studio. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Emma.
How are we this morning?
Oh, we had a bit of a rush morning this morning, but we got here in the end.
Oh, excellent. Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. Now, we've got a few things we're going to chat about, haven't we?
We have, yeah.
We're going to talk about the new up-and-coming Choral Society production that's coming up, entitled...
A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Oh, boy, did it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one. And we're also going to talk about some tree planting.
Yeah, tree planting. It's that time of year.
Mm.
And I'd also like to sort of update people people on the bellbirds in the park.
Yep. That would be great.
And talk about sort of the birds nesting and spring and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though it's not quite here yet.
No. So let's talk about the bellbirds first, actually. Let's go straight into that because that's really interesting. How are they doing?
Well, they're still around. I mean, that's the most important
thing. Fantastic.
We were just wondering whether or not they'd stay in the area.
Yeah.
And we've got a now little resident population at Whakanefa Regional Park that's seen most days.
Wow.
So, I don't know if you know Peter Lumsden, but he's a local Rocky Bay resident, and he's been doing a lot of help out there, monitoring the birds and seeing the birds that are coming.
Right. No, I don't know him. I've heard the name, yes.
Well, he's been helping out for about 15 years at the park.
I know the name then.
And he's been seeing four birds regularly down there at the feeding stations.
Great.
Which, if you go down there to the park down Dottis Lane, you can actually see the feeding stations just at the side of the track.
Brilliant. So if you're very quiet and very still, so are the key.
Well, you don't even have to be quiet and still, actually. They're pretty tame.
Pretty resilient, are they?
Yeah. If you're only about sort of 10 metres away from the feeding station, they're happy to hop in and out, and you'll see them in
great.
There.
Great. Great.
There's a couple of male birds.
Yep.
Both quite dark, the male birds, and then there's the two female birds, which are much lighter. But one of them, Peter calls Mr. Grumpy.
Really?
Because he chases everybody else off.
Oh, okay.
Won't let anybody else get a look in.
Okay.
So we've got two feeding stations far enough apart so he can't shoo birds off from both of them.
Right, so he's quite territorial, is he?
Very territorial.
Right.
And Rob Fenwick's got birds coming to his feeders over there.
Great.
So it looks like he's got a population that's established.
Mm.
And that's all we really need is to have a population that's established that then's going to start breeding.
Absolutely, yeah. When's breeding time?
Depends on the spring, really. But you're talking about September time the birds start to think about doing things, you know.
Yes.
But I don't know how they get around to it because most of the time the male birds are seeing the females off. So there must come a time where their hormones click in and they stop chasing them around. You know, for another reason.
Yeah, I think that's the way it works, yes.
Yep.
Oh, excellent. So that's really successful because I know there was something in the paper that we'd lost one to a rat some time ago. But that's normal. Isn't it normal? Yeah.
I mean, you've got to expect some losses.
Absolutely. And it doesn't mean that it's not going to be a success, does it? It just means, nature is taking its course because, unfortunately, we do have a rat population.
Absolutely.
And, of course, everybody should be trying to contribute to getting rid of that because every little bit does help, doesn't it, that people do.
Yeah.
In their own gardens, I'm talking about, as much as anything.
Yeah, you'd only need one station in your garden to control the whole the rat population in the area.
Mm. Excuse me. He's got a little bit of a frog in his throat there.
Yeah, so the birds, when they first arrived, they went all over the place. They flew in all sorts of directions.
Mm.
But some of them have managed to stay put, you know, in an area, and that's what we needed.
Yeah. I was at some friends in Ostend the other day, and they were telling me that they have a little population that flies into their garden and through their garden every day.
Or bellbirds?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Apparently so.
Well, they should give me a call.
They should. They should. I'll tell them to give you a call.
I've got a database, and I'm putting down on the database all the places where people have seen them.
Brilliant.
So it's important to know.
Yes.
Because if they've got a little resident population there, we might be able to help them out with a feeder or something to keep them in the area.
Excellent. Okay. I shall give them a call this afternoon and let them know that they need to let you know that they where they've seen the birds.
That'd be good, yeah.
Because it is important that we do all sort of make notes and tell people about that because that's the only way really to, because obviously they're a wild population, so there's no way that we can monitor them closely other than chipping them, which hasn't been done, has it?
When they were released, they had those radio transmitters
but they only last for a certain
time. The last one gave out about 5 weeks transmitting.
Yeah.
The one that rat ate,
that's
the only
right.
reason we found it was the transmitter was still transmitting. But the bird wasn't moving, so eventually we sort of went round and round in circles until we narrowed it down to a little spot, and there was the end of the tail with the transmitter lying on the ground.
Right.
Plus the leg with the bands on it in the same place.
Really?
So whatever had eaten everything apart from the bands, which were plastic, and the transmitter, which was metal.
Right. Okay. So, that's what happens. You expect some losses, don't you?
But the fact that we got some that are still there is great.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. And having had some mild weather is helpful as well, isn't it?
Mm.
For the population, because whenever a new population establishes anywhere, sort of if we have any severe weather, it can be slightly detrimental if they're still finding the good spots for them to.
Well, I was a bit worried they wouldn't have enough to eat.
Right.
Because after summer, there was so little berries on the trees.
Yeah, true.
But they've stayed in this area, and I think because the Kainuka trees there have got that the aphids that suck the sap out of the tree, and then the aphids sort of poo out. Liquid sugar, and the bellbirds drink that.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
So
they were in the air, and you notice the Kainuka trees, they've got black, like mold on the trunks, and that's because of all the sugar that's excreted on the outside of the trunk.
Right.
So they like that area.
Okay, great.
And then we had the songs playing of the bellbirds.
Yes.
And they like that. That kept them anchored in a place.
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, anybody can put out sugar water. And half oranges, they like those. You pick an orange and you split it in half across the equator, and you put it there. And you get the wax eyes coming as well, which they're really pretty.
Oh, they are. They're lovely, yeah.
And if there's any bellbirds around, they'd see that and might be something for them to eat too.
Fantastic. Mm. Fantastic. Oh, that's excellent. Well, that's really good news, isn't it, to hear about that. So fingers crossed we'll have some little chicks.
Yeah. They breed very fast.
Yes. Yes.
They can have three litters, I think, three clutches a year.
Yeah.
Up to five eggs in a nest. So
wow.
They can
We can establish quite a strong population very quickly.
Yeah.
With the founder population that we've got now. That's great. Fantastic.
If you want to hear them, just Google bellbird song and you can download MP3s and hear it that way.
Great.
That's the quickest way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just remind me, are there some on Tiree? Have they put some on Tiree?
There are lots on Tiree. That's where the birds came from.
That's what I thought.
Well,
yeah.
Half of them came from Tiree and half of them came from Tawhanui.
Yes, that's
which is that regional park further up the coast.
Yeah. Yes, because I was just thinking, I'm sure I've heard bellbirds, but I was thinking, where would it be? And of course, it would be at Tiree.
Yeah.
And I'm going back there later this week.
Next week. Fantastic there.
Yes, it is amazing.
My favourite. Environmental place.
It is mine as well. In fact, I'm very lucky. I'm going with Dr. Neil Mitchell, who is one of the founders of Tiree Tiree.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, him and another gentleman, Chris, I can't remember his surname, they actually started the restoration project on Tiree Tiree, and I'm working with him at the moment, with Neil Mitchell at the moment, so I'm very excited about going over with him on Thursday.
It's a fantastic success, that place.
Oh, it's apparently... He was telling me the other day that it's the support group, Tiree Tiree Friends, that basically run the island now, or manage the island, should I say, that they're apparently the second largest community conservation group in New Zealand now, which is excellent. I'm assuming Forest and Bird will be the largest. I didn't ask him that, but that was just an assumption.
All right. Well, I mean, Forest and Bird is huge. I mean,
yeah, so I'm sure it will be Forest and Bird being the first, and then Tiree
Tiree. The Tiree
Tiree. Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing,
isn't
really,
it?
Isn't it? For a sort of a localised group and a localised area, whereas obviously Forest
and Bird... There's nice, easy access there with the Fuller's boats going out, too.
Yes.
So that helps a lot.
Yeah, unless it's choppy.
And it's an exciting place to go. If you've never been, you've got to go to Tiree Tiree.
Absolutely.
You've got to go.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm not... excuse me. Oh, the frog is leaping into my throat. I'm not a weepy sort of person usually, but I've got to say, I went over...
You are.
I went over with this chap that was doing his PhD over there, and I went over with work, and I met him on the boat, and we were going along, he was telling me a little bit about it, and I was quite new to New Zealand then, and we got there, and we were walking around, and I felt quite emotional. I did at one point have to sort of give myself a little slap in the chops and say, pull yourself together. It's, you know, they're only birds. But it was quite a moving experience, especially when you sort of think about how many of our species we're losing here in New Zealand, the extinction capital of the world, some call it, you know, so very quickly. And to think of what Tiree Tiree has done in such a relatively short space of time.
Yeah, it shows how possible it is to restore the wildlife if you give it the chance.
Yes, absolutely.
So we've got to give it the chance, that's the thing.
And support it as well. So yes, if you've never been to Tiri Tiri...
the life is just so vibrant there.
Yeah,
you just see birds everywhere.
Yeah.
There's kakariki crawling on the ground a few metres away from you. Bell birds and stitch birds flying past your ears.
Yes,
the kokako singing there.
I had the
chance to spend a night there.
Went
out at night and I saw the kiwi, the little spotted kiwi out there. And they're not very little. And they're quite big.
Yeah, yeah.
And we saw the, heard the kokako calling with the dawn.
Wow.
It was just gorgeous.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So there is the facility to stay there.
Yeah.
Quite basic, kind of a bit like a very old sort
of
bunkhouse-y thing. But,
it's quite comfortable, though.
But it is. It is, yes. So, fantastic.
Take the most of it.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what I'd love to see here in Waiheke, but the...
what's that?
Oh, some kind of... that degree of restoration would be wonderful.
It would. It's difficult, though, with an urban population that we've got and commuting.
Yeah, but, you only need a group of people to enlarge an area. You know, just more people buy in, you enlarge the area. And as you enlarge the area, you give more and more chance for that wildlife to return.
Yes, we might need a bit of predator-proof fencing to get it established.
That's very expensive.
It's incredibly expensive, So, we can... It's something to aim for, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So let's talk about tree planting.
Yeah, good. We've done most of ours now.
Right.
And the ground's lovely and wet.
Yes.
You can't dig a hole without it filling with water now, so that's a good sign.
Great.
The groundwater seems to be replenished. The Cascades was running full, so it's a good time to have your trees in the ground. If you haven't done already, it's time you did.
Yep.
It's you need that... period between planting and the dry summer arriving if you want to avoid watering too much.
Of course, yeah, to get them established.
Mm. And of course you need to think about what kind of slope you've got. What kind of trees you're going to put in, because some people don't think about that too much.
Yeah, and where would you find this? I mean, you know me, I'm a bit of an ignoramus with these kind of things. Where would you find that kind of information?
Well, the best way to do is just look at what's growing in your local area. Look at the bush next to you and see what kind of trees are surviving on a similar kind of soil conditions to you've got, and also the kind of aspect to the sun. Like if you're on a north facing slope, it puts demands on the trees, so you need to have trees that can stand that kind of dryness in the summer.
Right.
So there's no pot in putting trees that really need damp, cool conditions on a north facing slope.
Right.
So just have a look at your neighbours and your neighbouring property, see what's growing well on their places, and also have a look at the local bush.
Yep. Okay. Brilliant.
And try and match your soil type to that.
Yeah.
And then...
I want a lemon tree. That's what I want.
Oh, yeah. You've not got a lemon at home?
No.
It's a little garden you got there.
It's
south-facing, isn't it? So it doesn't get too hot.
Yeah, if you say so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because you look out to Surfdale.
Yes,
there.
We do.
Yeah. I know Anne and Willie above you there.
Yes, I know. Yes. No, I think I need a little bit of assistance, I think, in what we should do. So at the moment I'm thinking a lemon tree.
Yeah.
I'd like a lemon tree. I'd like to be able to pick lemon. Didn't think that was possible to be able to have your own lemon tree in your
garden. Coming from England,
you don't.
It's so gorgeous to have citrus fruits and falling off the trees.
Fantastic.
I managed to get lemons growing at my place now. It took a few years to get the soil right.
Okay.
We got a north-facing slope and there was no soil on it at all. It was just gorse and clay.
Yeah, I think we're quite clayey, actually. A lot of places in the island are, aren't they?
Mm.
But anyway, enough of my gardening woes and mishaps. Let's talk about a funny thing happened on
the way to the forum.
what's happening with it? Because I know we've had a few delays.
We have had a few delays, and we needed the delays, actually. Because
why
it's
is that?
Not an easy show to put on.
No, it's not.
No. I mean, Richard set us a challenge.
And he's the musical director.
And Richard's the musical director. And he said, we can do this.
Right.
And we've got a couple of people in the cast who are not what you might call naturally tuneful.
Oh, you're so tactful.
So they've needed a lot of time to get the songs under their belts.
Right.
It's the kind of music with Stephen Sondheim that's got more accidentals in it than the key.
Yeah.
So it really takes some getting your ear into.
It does, and actually sort of working together with different people as well. Mm. That's with these kind of songs, it's sometimes harder than your traditional sort of tuneful.
Yeah.
Or regular tune.
But when you get it, it's beautiful. Mm. When you get it, it's really exciting.
Excellent. So remind me, what are the dates? When's it on?
Second and third week in September.
Right. Okay.
We were going to put it on much earlier, but we've sort of slid backwards. We couldn't put it on any. We were going to put it on in May, but then there was no time between then and when we were now doing it, so we had to sort of put it back.
Yep. Okay.
So we had lots of rehearsals. We're having a lot of fun with it, though.
Fantastic.
It's a lot of laughs.
Excellent. So what's the story? To tell people what the story is.
Well, the story is basically about a slave called Pseudolus.
Mm-hmm.
And he is living in Rome, and he doesn't like being a slave. So his master, Hero, is fallen in love with a courtesan in his neighboring property. And Pseudolus thinks, here's a way of getting my freedom. So he engineers Hero to agree that if he can get the girl for him, he can get his freedom.
Oh.
But the girl has been sold to a captain in the Roman army who comes this day to collect her. So it's all about the machinations of how Pseudolus engineers for the girl to finally be with Hero rather than going with the captain. So it's a twisted plot like most farces are.
Excellent.
With a few good songs.
Right.
We've also got the Senex, who's the father of Hero,
yep.
Who was played by Grant Lilley, and plays the man who would really like to get this young girl for himself, but ends up with his fearsome wife instead.
Oh, right, okay. So it's farcical?
Farcical.
Yes.
And comedic and lots of fast dialogue.
Excellent.
And some really good songs.
Speaking of songs, I believe you're going to sing one for us, are you?
Oh, I'll sing one for you.
Okay, so which one are we queuing up?
No, don't queue it for me, I just sing it off.
Oh, you're going to just sing it?
Yeah, I'll just sing it to you.
Oh, you're going to just sing to me, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
this song is sung twice in the play, and it's called Lovely.
Okay.
And this time when it's sung, it's Pseudolus singing it to Hysterium. And Hysterium is the head slave. And Pseudolus is trying to persuade Hysterium to pretend to be a dead girl so that he can convince the captain that his bride has died and therefore he's going to leave and Hero can get the girl, you say.
Got ya.
So Pseudolus is singing to Hysterium, who's now dressed in this beautiful white dress, to persuade Hysterium that he really can make it as a girl.
Right, excellent. Okay, well, take it away, Andy, and I'll just watch the levels. Go for it.
So he's singing, "You're lovely, absolutely lovely. Who'd believe the loveliness of you? Perfect, sweet and warm and winsome, radiant as in some dream come true. Now Venus will seem tame. Helen and her thousand ships will have to die of shame. You're so lovely, frighteningly lovely, that the world will never seem the same. You look lovely, that the world will never seem the same."
Oh my goodness. Round of applause. That
Thank
was
you.
Great. Thank you. I've got
at that point Hysterium is convinced that he really can make it. No,
he sorry.
He's really convinced that he can make it as a dead girl.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've got to just tell people, I couldn't look at you when you were singing that to me then. I felt all shy as if you were singing at me. And that doesn't happen very often. I don't go shy very often. But that was lovely. Oh, thank you very much. That was really good fun.
Oh, it's nice to get the songs out there.
Absolutely. And so tell me a bit more about some of the other numbers, because that's a slow one. There's some quite sort of up-tempo.
Oh, there's some up-tempo numbers, yeah. One we could play a little later is that one, Everybody Ought to Have a Maid.
Right, okay.
That's a lovely little number because it's got four guys dancing.
Right.
And it's been interesting getting some of these guys to learn the steps.
Has it?
Yeah.
Has it? Okay.
Yeah, you know,
all right.
Some people have got a couple of left feet, you know.
Listen, what we're going to do is we're just going to go to a track now, and then we'll come back and carry on talking about the musical for a couple of minutes before we play. Oh, would you like me to play one of the...
Why don't you play that one? Everyone Ought to Have a Maid.
Well, okay, let's go straight for that then. Yeah. Let's cue that one in, and here
maids
we go.
Maids like me are neat. I like maids, they're neat. Something no household should be without. Everybody ought to have a maid.
Everybody ought to have a maid.
Everybody ought to have a working girl. Everybody ought to have a lurking girl to put around the house. Everybody ought to have a maid.
Everybody ought to have a maid.
Everybody ought to have a menial. Consistently a congenial. And quieter than a mouse. Oh, wouldn't she be delicious, tidying up the dishes, neat as a pin. Oh, wouldn't she be delightful, sweeping out, sleeping in. Everybody ought to have a maid.
Everybody ought to have a maid.
Someone whom you hire when you're short of help, to offer you the sort of help you never get from a spouse. Fluttering up the stairway, shuttering up the windows, cluttering up the bedroom, buttering up the master, buttering all around the house. Oh, wouldn't she be delicious, tidying up the dishes, neat as a pin. Oh, wouldn't she be delightful, sweeping out, sleeping in. Everybody ought to have a maid.
Everybody ought to have a
someone
maid.
Who, when fetching you your slipper, will be winsome as a whippoorwill and graceful as a grouse. Skittering down the hallway, flittering through the parlor, chittering in the pantry, littering up the bedroom, puttering all around the house.
A maid,
a maid,
a maid,
a maid.
Everybody ought to have a maid. Everybody ought to have a serving girl, a loyal and unswerving girl, who's quieter than a mouse.
Oh, think of her at the dustbin, especially when she's just been traipsing about. Oh, wouldn't she be delightful living in,
giving out.
Oh,
everybody ought to have a maid. Collecting bits of paper and strings, appealing in her apron strings, beguiling in her blouse.
Clattering through the attic,
chattering in the cellar,
clattering in the kitchen,
flattering in the bedroom, pottering all around. Someone who's efficient and reliable, obedient and pliable,
and quieter than a mouse.
Oh, wouldn't she be so nimble, fiddling with her thimble, mending a gown. Oh, wouldn't she be delightful,
cleaning up,
leaning down.
Oh,
everybody ought to have a maid. Someone who'll be busy as a bumblebee, and even if you grumble, be
in the ante room, jiggling in the living room, giggling in the dining room,
wiggling in the other room, sputtering all around. The house,
I didn't realise that was there. Hold on, here we go. That just caught me by surprise that moment. I should
quick
have
ending.
Known. I was so busy listening to Andy singing along to it that
that's
I...
That's a lot of fun, that song.
It is. And it sounds like it's going to be a really fun musical. So, yeah. Tom, let's talk tickets and availability and that kind of thing.
Tickets are available by calling 1,000.
1,000?
1,000. 372-1000.
Right, okay.
So a very simple number. All you need to remember is 1,000.
Excellent, excellent. And
the funny thing happened on the way to 1,000.
Brilliant, brilliant. So how come, is that somebody's house? Were they ringing somebody?
That's Marion Knight.
Right.
She's organising all the tickets. We decide this year we actually won't have tickets.
Yeah.
What we'll do is you'll ring in, you'll book your ticket and send her the money. So you'll have a booking.
Oh, okay.
And you just turn up at the door with your name and the booking will be there for you.
Great. Fantastic.
It means that we don't all have to carry our tickets and organise who sold what to where. And it's very complicated.
It does, doesn't it? And also collecting all the money in can be sort of a
logistical nightmare. So that's one person taking the money, organising everything.
Great.
So good on you, Marion.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marion. Thank you, Marion.
Thank you, Marion.
Okay, now then, we're going to just quickly round up with talking about one of my faves on the island.
The Dotterels.
The Dotterels, yes.
Waiheke is bird icon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we've got bellbirds as well now.
So it's split.
Split now.
Bit
split
of loyalties. Yeah, bit of competition. So let's talk about them. Yeah,
well, they're down the beach still. They've been there all winter, hanging out at the park. But it's time for them to start nesting soon.
Right.
If you go down there now, you'll see the boys are red, got that beautiful red chest, and the girls are not quite so bright. And they're starting to defend their territory.
Colour-wise, he means, colour-wise.
I do. And they're flying up and down the beach defending their territories and getting sort of jockeying for position for the best bit of sand, well, best bit of shells, in their case. And they'll be starting to lay at the end of August. There's some others also at Church Bay.
Mm.
There's a couple that try and nest there.
Right.
And there's some down the eastern end that try to nest down on beaches. So they really only succeed, though, if you've got people under control and the dogs off the beach.
Yeah, absolutely. The dogs are a big part, aren't they?
It's good that we've now got, looks like we've got those dog walking beaches.
Yes, fantastic. Yes. Yeah. So you can't see this, but Andy's actually brought me in a couple of wonderful pictures of, firstly, one of the eggs. And they're beautiful looking eggs, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're just and then when you see the chick, and they just fit. The eggs are speckled. What would you say? Mottled?
Yeah, speckled.
Yeah, and
speckled eggs, and they blend in so well with the sand and the shells that unless you know what you're looking for, you just would step on them if they weren't fenced off.
Mm.
And then when the chicks hatch.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
They are so cute.
They're little fluff balls.
We can look at it, but you can't.
Little fluff
balls.
They
are little cutesy little fluff balls. So, quite hopeful this year that we're going to get...
Yeah, we've got six pairs at the beach.
Six pairs, that's great.
Mm.
That's really good, isn't it?
And so they should do really well.
Excellent, excellent. Oh, well, fantastic. And fingers crossed. And hopefully you'll come back and tell us how they're doing sometime soon.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much for coming in, Andy,
always.
A
pleasure, Emma.
And to be sung to by you in the studio. Oh, it was lovely. Thank you very much and speak to you soon.
Bye, Emma.
Welcome, Martini.
Welcome. Great morning, isn't it?
It is. It's lovely and sunny out there. I'm going to go for a nice walk afterwards, I think. Go and get a bit of fresh air, stretch my legs.
That's right, you have to do that.
When it's not raining.
Well, so you put a raincoat on.
Absolutely. I've got gum boots now well. I've got nice flowered gum boots, as you would expect me to have, flowered patterned ones. But anyway, so's Darren.
Yes.
He's got his nice flowery ones.
Oh, nice.
Not really. He'll kill me for saying that. But, why are you here? You're here because I asked you to come and talk to me about your time with the Rainbow Warrior, but not just what you've talked about before. I've said to him, let's sort of do it a little bit differently. So we're going to talk about a few little anecdotes as well. But first of all, let's put things in context, because I know that you were supposed to speak on that last week and didn't have time. So I was like, well, I want to give you some time. So thanks very much for coming back, because I know you're a busy man. Greenpeace, 25-year anniversary last week, wasn't it? Was it week before?
Week before, July 10th.
From the bombing of Rainbow Warrior.
Exactly.
Yep. So for those people, I'm sure lots of people do know, but not everybody knows your role with Greenpeace and how were you involved with it? What were you doing with Greenpeace and the Rainbow Warrior?
Well, I arrived with the Warrior as I was first mate on board, chief officer.
Yep.
After the bombing, I stayed on in New Zealand till about October or so.
Mm.
And then I heard that they offered me a job to come back to New Zealand, but this time working ashore as kind of the manager of marine operations in Auckland.
Right.
At that time.
Yeah.
And at that time we had a huge Antarctica campaign.
Yeah.
Put a base camp on Antarctica in the Ross Sea.
Yeah.
And we came back every year. And that became my responsibility for the ship, you know.
Wow.
The ships which operate there. But also for the old Warrior, because, you know, a solution had to be
Something had
found.
To be done with
something had to be done. You had to make a decision. You can't, you know.
So what were the options? What were the options of what could be done? So this is, we're talking after it had been bombed.
Yeah.
So what were the options that were available?
At the time, there were basically only like two options.
Yeah.
A repair, if possible.
Yeah. So repair and resale, relaunch.
And then find another way of, you know, a Rainbow Warrior, which is not at sea anymore, but which still has a type of a function. Now, the repair possibility, we had experts.
Yeah.
We had good contact with Smith, it's a global salvage company.
Right.
And we worked with them in the past. And they sent out some experts to assess the situation, basically salvage the ship, what we're going to do. And they went over it all the way. And their advice was, severe damage.
Mm.
And it will cost a big packet of money to repair that that boat. Now, at the time, you know, Greenpeace wasn't really huge. It was big in Holland
but
and
it
Germany.
It didn't have much sort of financial clout.
No. Greenpeace New Zealand has always been a struggling organization, you know, on par with the other peace movement in New Zealand. So money was tight, you know, and we really didn't know the impact of the bombing on the organization, you know.
Yeah.
We knew that, you know, this is serious, and, you know, it gives you the motivation to go on, because if you know, the French take it this serious, then you must be on the right track.
You must be doing something good.
We kind of were used to, you know, to small budgets. And in the film, it shows that kind of clearly we converted the Rainbow Warrior before embarking on this Pacific voyage.
Mm.
And this was an idea which was kind of launched by the captain at the time, Peter Wilcox, American fella.
Right.
And
I'm just going to pause and rewind just a second for those people that don't know which film you're talking about.
That's the Rainbow Warriors of Waiheke Island.
Yeah.
The Susanna Ra's movie, which she shot here on the island and combined it with archival Greenpeace and other footage to present a picture of all us ex-Greenpeaces. Why do we end up on this island?
I know.
Of all places.
It is quite amusing
and
when
it
you think
is
about
kind
it.
Of interesting, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you combine that with the history and all that.
Sure.
But in the movie,
yeah,
it shows clearly, we try to convert the Rainbow Warrior to sail, because we knew we had to do big passages in the Pacific and to conserve fuel.
Yeah.
It would be good to have sails on it. The captain at that time, Peter Wilcox, he had tried it on his way back from, I think they were in the Bering Sea with the Russian whaling and you know, all sorts of dramas up there. But on his way back, they put a great big piece of canvas on and see how that goes.
And how did that work?
And, well, I wasn't aboard then, but he said, yeah, well, hey, she moves, eh? And, you know, and we all have a background on sailing ship. I spent 10 years on a Baltic Trader sailing vessel, Ketch, built in Denmark, you know. Uh-huh. So I can see the advantages of sail, and it makes a lot of sense already in 85. It even makes more sense now.
Sure.
But in 85
of course,
it did.
Yeah, even more now, yeah.
And we had such a small budget, you know. Mm. I think it run out in the first 3 days or something.
No. Oh, that's typical.
And we were going to hire all, you know, outside people to help us convert this thing to sail, but in the end, you know, the budget had already run out, and we had to do all the bloody work ourselves, you know. And apart from those masts, which they hired an American company who welded it all together, all the rest we had to do ourselves.
Yeah, because you don't want a DIY mast on there, really,
No. You know, you don't want the whole thing coming down about 100 nautical miles off Jacksonville. We were building it. Awful place, Jacksonville. Gee. But anyway, it shows we didn't have so much money. We had to do the work ourselves.
Yeah,
you know,
grassroots organization.
Yeah, it was pretty much, very much grassroots. And little did we know that, you know, these millions started to come in. And but that only became apparent, like, during the year after.
Yeah.
And, of course, we expected a rise in supporters. You know, there's a sympathy kind of factor.
And that kind of but tragedy sort of can
motivate.
Enormous
amount of money. There were unheard amount of money for Greenpeace, you know.
And was that coming globally?
Globally, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that was all globally. So, in the end, you know, we knew. If we knew then what we know now, I think an effort would have made to repair it, because there were a lot of people upset by the fact that in the end we chose to sink the vessel.
Oh, really? Were a lot of people upset?
Oh, yeah, it was 50-50, eh?
Right.
Pro and con.
Okay.
And
so you've got a
major difficult decision.
Yeah. So once that decision had been made, you were
I was
in charge,
responsible for getting that thing down, you know.
Right. So tell me how that went.
It took a long time before the plan was kind of finalized. But once the plan was finalized, what we had to deal with was to, you know, if you sink the vessel, you have to take all the shitty stuff out, eh?
Yeah.
You can't just put that on the bottom of Matari Bay, you know? I mean, that's a campaign where Greenpeace actually works on, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, you have to walk the walk, kind of thing.
I mean, you know, to me, there was, if we do it, then we have to do it properly. But, you know, I think I had to deal with about 4 government agencies.
Really?
To give their approval and all that, and inspections and this and that. And we spent days and days and days and days in cleaning up this thing, eh?
Mm.
And volunteers coming, whole Saturdays spent, and just, you know.
And when you're saying cleaning up, you're talking about sort of removing all
the everything
that you
removing
brought.
Quite a bit. This was a diesel-electric vessel, and in that whole setup, there's a lot of stuff which is basically toxic, and you have to get it out, you know, and you know, asbestos and all that shit, you know. So there was a huge operation, and my biggest fear at the time of the sinking, you know, I couldn't think of, is this good or bad? All I could think of is, well, gee, I hope we didn't forget some down a compartment, and finally the Rainbow Warrior goes down, the last fleck goes underwater, and then a great big brown dirty slick appears on the surface, you know.
No.
And I just stood there, and all, I didn't even look at the warrior. All I did was look at the water, you know.
Really? You were that nervous?
Yeah, I was that nervous, you know. I mean,
I'm giggling at the thought of it. I mean, that's because it didn't happen. But man, we would not be giggling about it if that had happened. That would have been really, really dreadful.
I would go in hiding, serious hiding.
And we'd never have had you here on the radio. That would have as our navigator. That would have been a loss to society, Martini.
But at the same token, it was good to work with the government agencies and all. All the authorities, because we all had that fear, you know, and that
how
fear
were they?
Was
how
shared.
Did, they how were did good they respond? They were
yeah,
good?
Yeah, absolutely, no problem. Yeah. Very easy to deal with. The most difficult part was at the actual cleaning, you know.
Sure.
And there's some interesting bits. I can remember one time very clearly, you know, I went into what we call the steering flat, and there's the steering engine, and that, you know, for the propeller and for the rudder,
yep.
The steering engine, and I went down there, and at the bottom of it I saw something, so I picked it up, and it was a cassette, music cassette, and it was the Beatles, A Hard Day's Night.
Really?
And I thought, gee, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You know, the cassette must have come from, you know.
From a cabin further up?
No, from the lounge, because we had a lot of cassettes in the on the ships, you know, to entertain ourselves. I had my whole collection went down with that warrior, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still pissed off about that, you know.
All your music.
Yeah, all the music went, you know. Mm. I was a fanatic cassette taper, you know.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. Party
did you tape. Do your own mashups?
Pardon?
Did you do your own mashups?
Yeah. Party tapes and all
party
that.
Yeah. I bet, actually, that not wanting to dwell on the sad elements, but I bet that was quite difficult as well to do that cleanup. So you had one side of you was very practical, and I suppose that's what had to kick in, just that practical side, as well as you know. But each of you must have been sort of dealing with difficult emotions.
You
at
have
the
your
time.
Own emotions, but you know, I mean, you have to go on, eh?
Of course,
you can't stop and dwell. You have to go forward. You have to move on.
Yeah, and you've got to. You've got to keep that momentum going
as
well.
You have to keep the momentum going.
Because, if you go away and leave it for a while, then things dissipate.
There was no time to sit down and dwell. There was absolutely no time.
And in
time.
A way, I would say, would you say that was better? That was the best way?
Much better. Keep yourself busy.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, you were busy the whole day long.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I still know and recognize very clearly... I got a big mess under my house, see? And that's all my paper archives and this and that. I never look at it anymore, but I don't know why I have it under the house. But anyway,
just keep it.
The smell I will always recognize.
Right.
I still have, you know, papers and stuff which has been underwater.
Yeah,
and it has a certain smell to
right.
it, and I can still smell it. Eh?
Yeah,
I can still smell
it's,
it.
It's amazing how smell can evoke memories
it is.
And, of times and stuff.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
85.
Not moved those papers since then.
Doesn't say very much about my cleaning, isn't it? Why do you watch it?
Yeah, well,
No.
No, that's good. Well, listen, we've got time for another track, and then I'm just going to come back because you've got. I want to hear about the campaign in Iceland after we've had. And we've still got Martini in the studio with us this morning. Hi.
Aye. Again.
Again. You quite liked The Cure, didn't you? You were quite happy when I played that track.
Oh, it's all right. Yeah.
Oh, he says it's all right for. He was dancing. Yeah, dancing in his chair.
Banging his head on the microphone.
So, you're just going to quickly tell me a little bit about the campaign in Iceland and a funny little anecdote that you had there. And then we're going to move to talk about Sea Shepherd, aren't we?
That's right. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the story about what happened in the campaign in Iceland.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a bit of a funny one, actually. You know, the first campaigns of the original Rainbow Warrior in Europe were on sealing and sealing in the Orkneys and whaling in Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
And so 1978 was the first year they went to Iceland and campaigned there. But the one thing, they made a kind of an interesting discovery on a ship. You know, a ship is a bottomless pit. You can pour money in and it goes forever.
Uh-huh.
If you don't have money, then some things become less important. But other things are essential that you maintain that. Now, one of the essential items on the Rainbow Warrior, on any ship really, is that, you know, the area where the propeller is and at the end of the shaft, and to be watertight seals there, and there has to be lubrication oil to keep it all running smooth, just like a car, you know.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So when it became time, you have to replace that quite regularly.
What,
so
the oil?
The oil. So when they had to replace the oil, they you know, they looked in the book, the maintenance book, what type of oil is it, what brand and this and that, and order it, you know.
Sure.
So you go to the sea, to the ship chandlers, you know, who have everything for a ship, and hey, can you give us so much liter of this and this oil? And and the chandler said, yeah, no problem, man, but you know, it's whale oil.
No.
It was. Bloody whale oil.
Oh, no.
Now, I wasn't there at the time. But I'm not sure exactly what they did, you know. If they were in a hurry, they probably continued a little bit with that. I don't know about that, but they had to rapidly look for an alternative.
Yeah.
And they did, you know.
Absolutely.
Oh, that kind of says, you know.
Yeah, that's probably something that isn't in the history books too much there.
No, not much. But you know, I mean, that's one of these things.
That was the reality.
Reality.
Yeah,
I mean,
nothing is perfect.
And
you
nothing
can't
is perfect. No. You know, you have to imagine these people coming on their boats.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't always change everything straight away. It's
exactly.
same with
you
wildlife conservation,
you know.
Yeah. But listen, talking about everything not being perfect, let's talk about Peter Bethune, and I can never pronounce his surname. We know who we mean.
Peter B.
And the Sea Shepherd. What's your take on that?
Well, it's mixed, you know. Let me say in the first place that I got quite a bit of respect of Peter. I think, you know, his drive is unquestionable about stopping the whaling.
His motivation is not in question.
Absolutely not, you know. I know years ago at one stage there was talk about within Greenpeace, you know, that he would join some Greenpeace campaign. I don't know. Well, no, I know what happened. Greenpeace never went back to the Southern Ocean.
Mm.
There was a decision we consciously made. One of the reasons is that Greenpeace wanted to take the campaign to Japan themselves talk with Japanese people.
Mm.
But we also were a little bit afraid of that because of the differences between Sea Shepherd and Greenpeace and the continuous criticism of Paul Watson about Greenpeace. That he just has a campaign there. I don't know why why he goes like that. He works for Sea Shepherd, but he can't resist to say the ex-founder and this and that of Greenpeace and slagging them. What you get if you both there is that that media, they love these kind
play
of things.
It
and
off.
So
yeah.
the issue becomes Sea Shepherd and Greenpeace. And that's
and it
not
takes
the,
exactly
it's not the issue. The
no,
issue
it takes
is
away. Yeah.
Now with Peter, when he came back and his incredible and his criticism on the New Zealand government, he's barking at the wrong tree.
Yeah.
He really is.
Well,
and the issue is whaling, Japanese whaling, scientific whaling.
So you think he's
he made a mistake.
He's muddied the waters. I mean, pardon
he made
the
a
pun,
mistake
yeah.
in that. I think you know he really did, and it takes away from his
the actual real issue of what he was doing
as a person and the real issue, and that's one of the basics in campaigning, really, you know.
And, of course, there's been a backlash now. There's been a backlash sort of in the media against him about how ungrateful and the government are angry. And, you know, he's basically...
It's a shame, you know.
He's got everybody's back up.
It's a shame. But that's also the thing a bit with Sea Shepherd and Greenpeace. Sea Shepherd always barks at the Australian and New Zealand government to go... And help out and arrest the whalers. But again, it's barking at the wrong tree because Australia and New Zealand don't have powers at all to arrest anybody in the Southern Ocean because the bottom line is Antarctica belongs to everybody.
Yeah.
It's, countries can lay claim to it, whatever they want, but Antarctica belongs to everybody. That's the way it is. That's the very reason that Australian and New Zealand warships, they cannot arrest illegal fishing vessels at sea, at the high seas, and for that same reason they cannot arrest. So they're barking at the wrong tree.
So why is he still why is he still going on about that then? If it isn't actually, is it because the Sea Shepherd are calling for law changes? Because again, they kind of have to take that. I mean, United. I don't know. It's interesting that it's still going on about that when that actually can't, you know,
they can't do
happen.
It, you know, they can't do it. And it, and in fact, I see, you know, their actions, they're more of a hindrance to find a real solution to whaling than.
Do you think so?
Oh, it definitely is. If you see the reaction in Japan on Sea Shepherd, that's horrible. You see, we got two people, within the Japanese justice system as well, Greenpeace Japan, they intercepted whale meat from the ship. Their case is still going, eh? They're still awaiting verdicts.
But that's not what they're talked about.
No.
Or not here, anyway. I don't.
It's not. Well, it is a little bit known, you know, but not widely known. Not known as Peter's case was known. And
so, do you think he's foolish, arrogant, rude? What are your?
No, I think he's you know.
I mean, his
I think he's
to
a
the
good
government.
Man. He's a good man, you know, but.
But he can be a good man and still make mistakes.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, he's allowed to make mistakes like
absolutely.
That. He's absolutely allowed to do so. My problem, really, with Sea Shepherd is their style of their interpretation of non-violence. That's the bottom line of it. And Paul Watson has a very liberate...
Their interpretation, you
yeah,
said.
Paul Watson has a very liberal kind of thought about that, you know? Paul Watson fills the bow of his ships up with cement and then start ramming other vessels at sea.
Really?
And, you know, to me, that goes too far, because what he forgets is that there's also crew on board those ships.
Mm.
Crew who have absolutely no decision about whatever the ship is doing. All they do is be out at sea, and usually under quite slave type conditions, try to make some money for their, and seamen to sea. You don't attack other seamen at sea. That you don't.
No.
That's not non-violent anymore. It's violence.
Mm.
And the one, and this year's campaign show the same. They shine lasers in from Sea Shepherd vessels into the Japanese whalers. Now, I don't think that's a very good thing. Everybody knows that you don't shine lasers in somebody else's eye.
No,
you don't.
No, absolutely not.
And it's
aggravating the situation.
It's
doing
aggravating
those kinds
the
of
situation.
Kind of things,
you don't want situations like that.
Mm.
You know,
mm.
you must look at. It's clear, and that's from a Greenpeace perspective. You know, we've been there many, many, many times. More than Sea Shepherd been there. You know. In the Southern Ocean. But you always have to question yourself, are we still on the right track?
Yes. And bring yourself back.
You know,
and
unless you go into violent means, there's no way that you can stop the activity with non-violent means.
Mm.
You can maintain it for a long time, but you cannot stop the whole process. The only way is if you go with a fleet there. If you go with more ships there, you can do it. If you take a ship to the factory vessel, to the back of the factory vessel, so they cannot load any whales on board, then the operation
then
is stopped.
The, you block them operationally. Yeah,
you need quite a lot of vessels. You need a fleet there, and unfortunately. Greenpeace and Sea Shepherd don't appear to be able to work together on the issue.
No, and you know, it is a real shame.
It is a shame, but that's the way it is.
But it is just, that's just life, you know. Not everybody's going to agree.
That's life, you know.
Yeah, the issue is incredibly important,
and again, I'm not really slagging Watson. I have lots of admiration for the drive the man had. The man has, and that he stick with the issue. Mm. He's there every year.
Mm.
I got respect for the guy.
No, I can appreciate that.
And I'm not going to slag him.
No, but I don't
agree with his interpretation on non-violence.
It's as simple as that. I think
that's
really important that you just qualify that you know you still have respect, but you're entitled to not agree with their methodology. And I've got to be honest, I'm pretty much on the same path with you on
exactly,
that one. And,
you know, and
for me, the lack of clarity now on the issue, and the fact that it's that the issue of whaling isn't what's talked about. It's the issue of you know, what's going on with Peter B and his lack of gratitude or whatever it is. I just think that's a shame, because that isn't
what should be
talked about.
And he put the impossible on the New Zealand government. The New Zealand government has no way that they can interfere with the Japanese justice system.
Of course, you can't.
You can visit people, and I'm sure he had visits.
I'm sure there's negotiations we know there have been.
You can't interfere.
Yeah.
It's simple.
Listen, we're going to end it there. I could talk to you for hours, all day about these issues. Very interesting. And thank you so much for coming on and talking to them with me.
My pleasure.
It's been great. Yeah. So time for
I have no idea what I'm going to play tomorrow night. So I think it will be an oldie.
Do you?
Yeah.
It's going to be an oldie but a goodie.
An oldie party.
An oldie but a goodie.
Yes.
Thanks very much, Martini. I look forward to listening to you tomorrow night on The Navigator.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke People, Events and Issues, brought to you by Island, Art, Craft, Giftware, Clothing and Bric-a-Brac, Ocean View Road, Oniroa.
Hello and welcome to Jill.
Hi, Emma.
Hi, and Jill is from, she's the newest recruit at the Art Gallery, aren't you?
Yep.
So, talk to us, you've just come in to talk to us a little bit about what's going on at the moment.
Yep. It's our last week of the 15% off sale in the shop.
Uh-huh.
So get in quick. It's a good sale, a good discount.
Yeah, there's some beautiful jewelry in there. I'm actually thinking I must pop in.
Yeah, and actually the Winter Jewels exhibition is also on at the same time.
Yeah, so what exhibitions are on at the moment?
There's Bridget Oakley Stevens' Painting the Dream, and that's it's sort of a rehabilitative exhibition for the artists who are members of the Wish Trust and Horizons.
Right, so she's done some work with those groups, hasn't she? Yes, we've had Bridget come on and talk previously when she was artist in residence there down the block. So she's done an exhibition or she's prepared an exhibition?
Yep, and it's really good, actually. It's really worth seeing.
Excellent. And how long is that on until?
All three exhibitions currently on are on until the 9th of August, which is a Monday.
Right, okay. So tell me about the other exhibitions as well.
So the Winter Jewels, what I was just mentioning, is a jewelry exhibition. It's really good. Lots of famous jewelers. And the best part is anything you want, you take with you. It's not a leave it until the end of the exhibition.
Oh,
buy it,
really?
Wear it out the door.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's quite unusual, isn't it? You normally have to wait till the end of an exhibition to pick up your piece.
But there's a lot of good stuff and it's going quick, so.
Great.
And the other one is the Member Show, which is also good and lots of local talent and really worth seeing.
So what sort of pieces are in there? How many?
Lots of variety. There's paintings as normal, a few sculptures, and just some drawings and wall works and mixed media, lots of mixed media.
Oh, really? What? Give us an example of a couple of pieces.
There's Michael Pierce wooden piece, which is actually sold. So
yeah, but you can tell us a little bit about the piece.
It's almost a puzzle of New Zealand. And it's beautiful colors. Kim, who actually works at the gallery, she's done a painting, but it's got this, I think it's a wax over the top.
Right.
A kind of encaustic painting, and it sort of shimmers as you walk by.
Oh, lovely.
And some really
what's your favorite piece?
There's a Kaya Nyankaro sculpture on, and it's, I love her work. It's just amazing, and she's a local Waikiki artist. I think that's my favorite.
That's your favorite piece out of the lot. And you've got a new artist in residence coming up.
Sarah Guppy's show. She's our current artist in residence.
Current one, yeah.
She's showing from the 13th of August, and she does a lot of glass paintings and some gilded works and interesting stuff worth seeing. And also, we're doing a fundraiser for her, the Venetian Carnival dinner this Friday night, and there's only a few seats left. So get in quick. But yeah, it's a fundraiser dinner, a 3-course dinner.
So tell us a few more details about that then. We're always happy to support a fundraiser.
It's at Mud Brick. 3 courses, entertainment, wine. It'll be fun. And the theme is Venetian Carnival. So it's
come dress up, is it?
You can if you want to, but you don't have to. There's no requirement. And tickets are $140 per person, which includes 3 courses and wine. And
So
it's a really good deal.
Excellent.
And it's a fundraiser. So.
Okay, so where can people get those tickets from?
From the gallery.
Brilliant.
Get in quick. Sooner the better.
Okay. So that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And there's just a few tickets left, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's going quick, so.
Okay.
So make sure you. It'll be fun.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming along. And it's been great talking to you. And look forward to hearing next month what else is going on at the gallery.
Okay, thanks, Emma.
And welcome, Rosalie.
Hello, everyone. It's a beautiful, beautiful day in Waiheke, and the library's busy as ever.
It is. I've been seeing people running in and out. It looks very, very busy.
Yes,
so
it is.
So we are down to the wire. We have, what have we got? We've got about 4 minutes, so let's
right.
crack
well,
on.
What I'm working on this week is bringing over and drawing from all over our libraries books which we have, which have been nominated for the Irish Impact Award. Now that is becoming, well, already it's the most lucrative writing prize for authors.
Okay.
It's £100,000.
Really?
So it's naturally, yes, but you can't just nominate yourself. A library has to nominate you.
Right. Is this for new works?
Yes. Then the last two or three years, it's judged. It's that sounds a wee bit unfair, but it's because some of the works have been translated. So if they've been translated into English and that book is nominated, then the original author gets £75,000, and the translator, who has such an important part to play in the literacy value of it, gets £25,000.
Oh, okay.
And that's what happened this year. The winner was a Dutch author, and the book is called The Twins.
Mm.
However, from all over the world, libraries selected their best pick for ones they thought had literary merit and a good story.
Yeah.
So it's the best of fiction. And I must say, since I put them in the display case, they've been running off the shelves. I put 30 in, and by the end of the day, people had discovered them, and there were about 8 gone in the last hour, and then during the next day, the whole lot, and I had to hurriedly get over more and more. So I'm still in the process, and they're still running off the shelves because people have never seen these books before, and they're just wonderful. I love the title of one I picked up, The Voluptuous Delights of Peanut Butter and Jam. And somebody said, that's got to be American. And I said, no, because it's jelly. And it's not. It's Rhodesia. And it's a debut novel by this particular author, Lauren Liebenberg. And I'm looking forward to reading it. Another one that I had started, A Girl Made of Dust. Now, I'd heard that critically acclaimed somewhere else, so I'd ordered it. And it's just delightful. For example, the room seemed darker and heavier than usual with its old furniture. And the tired curtains that wanted to lie down, if only the hooks would let them. I mean, it's just brilliant writing.
Yes, I love that.
So that's A Girl Made of Dust. So each one of these books has been very carefully selected.
Right.
And by the leading libraries in the capital cities of the world, and a few outstanding libraries. And
right.
I'm pleased to say that as well as Wellington, which gets in because it's a capital city, Auckland, Christchurch and Dunedin have rated among those leading libraries of English, which is a huge pat on the back.
It is.
Because some countries only get one nomination.
Wow.
And so we've actually got 12 for our writers.
Oh, that's brilliant. We're running out of time. How do they get these books? You've got them.
You just walk into the library and say, where's the Impact books? And if you can't see them, there's pictures up on the wall and they're in the glass case.
That's brilliant. Oh, well, thank you so much, Rosalie. I'm sorry I've had to cut you short there. We've had a short one this month, but we'll make up for it next time, I promise.
It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 25th of July. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 25th of July, Emma Boa Warner talked to Fiona Gregory from Community Education, Paula Dashwood from the Parents and Friends of Te Hurahi School, Andy Spence from the Waiheke Coral Society, and also with his other hat on as Park Ranger of Whakanefa Regional Park, our very own Rainbow Warrior, Martini, Jewel from the Art Gallery, and Rosalie Hennigan from Waiheke Library.